Welcome to the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series, where your host, Andy Jacob, interviews leading entrepreneurs, founders, and CEOs about their incredible companies and discusses their unique entrepreneurial journeys. If you're the CEO or founder of an exciting and exceptional company, the editorial team of .com Magazine welcomes you to pitch your business story to appear on this exciting interview series by reaching out to Mr. Jacob at .com Magazine at .commagazine.com. And without further ado, here is another amazing entrepreneurial story on the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series.
Good afternoon, everyone. Andy Jacob here with the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series. I have one of the most interesting shows I've had on for a long time. I've been able to get Mr. Ian Iberg on the show today, and Ian is the CEO and founder of NanoVMs. And this is such an interesting business Ian's been able to put together. The business is all built on what they call the Unikernel. And if you don't know about it, it's a cloud-based solution that we're going to get into. And it's something you really need to know about if you don't know about it, because what Ian is doing with NanoVM's company is absolutely remarkable. Ian, thanks so much for coming on the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series today.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Andy. Appreciate it.
It's great to have you on the show. You know, as we always do to start the interview, let's pull the lens back to 30,000 feet and tell us about NanoVMs.
For sure. Yeah. So as you mentioned, we work with this kind of almost obscure niche technology called Unikernels. And essentially what it really is an attempt to deal with kind of the underlying software infrastructure that we use today, which is really decades old. The most prominent server-side operating system out there, Linux, is about 30 years old now. It's largely the same thing as Unix, which is 50 years old. And the fact is like both of those completely predate virtualization in the form of, say, VMware, and then also the cloud in the form of, say, Amazon Web Services. So that's kind of what we're doing. It's a lot of low-level technical work, but something that, you know, we just have to do.
I love it. It's so interesting. You know, the server operating system really has remained the same for the past 50 years. And as we store more of our, you know, data online and through servers, we all risk our data being compromised by cyber threats. And your company really, through the Unikernel solution, has really solved this problem in an amazing way. And that's really what caught our attention, Ian. So maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. It's funny because you come to nanovms.com and you might think that we're a cybersecurity company. We're really not. But cyber just happens to be like one of the main benefits of what we do. If you go to RSA or Black Hat or any of the big cybersecurity trade shows and you walk the floors, there's not a lot of companies that are, focused on kind of like what we're doing. They're all focused on looking for hack systems or systems that are going to get hacked, or, you know, they're in this very reactive motion. And it's been that way for, you know, years. And what we do is we kind of look at, upgrading the actual defensive measures of a system, because, you know, in our eyes, it just hasn't been dealt with for decades. And so, to put it into very plain words, like exactly how it works, a hacker breaking into a system is just like a thief breaking into your house. You know, they might kick in the front door, they might bust open a window or something like that, but that's only the entryway to the house. It's not why they've come to your house. And it's the exact same thing on the server side. If a hacker is like breaking into your system, they might find a bug, they might use an exploit to get that initial entry point into the system, but that's not why they're there. They want to run their software on your system. And this is where the Unikernel comes in, because it just doesn't even have the mechanism to do that. it's not like we don't allow them access to it. It's like, if we wanted to run other software on these systems other than the one that's running, it just doesn't work, you know? So that's kind of the little aha moment when it comes to cybersecurity with these things.
It's so interesting, Ian. You know, you've been able to gain recognition in 5 target markets, and they're very big target markets. They're healthcare, finance, energy, telecom, and government. You know, you've been raising some rounds of funding. You actually got some funding from the Department of Energy, and you've also received revenue from the United States Air Force, which is really amazing and a feather in your cap. When we talk about filing patents, we know that you've got a couple of patents issued for your technology. Do you have more patents sort of on the board for your company? Because it seems like what you're doing is so interesting as a second generation opportunity with regard to, you know, the entire company and what you're doing with the Unikernel.
Yeah, we do. So as you mentioned, we have 2 patents issued today. One, we have what's called a continuance on it. And what a continuance allows you to do is to kind of come back, and even after the patent has been issued, you can come back and revise it and kind of make it better. So investors love to see that sort of stuff. And it's nice to have the option open. We actually have the second continuance on this one patent because we're already emboldened it. And then we have 2 other patents that we've filed already. So that's about 4. We'll probably continue to, you know, file patents as we kind of see a good fit for them. And, you know, a lot of people always ask, well, like, what are you using these patents for? And, you know, generally speaking, people have 3 different things. You know, they use them for defensive measures, offensive measures, or a store of value. And we're not trying to use them for offensive measures at all. I mean, that's just be a waste of money, right? The defensive is definitely there because I've worked at a company before. The very same day they raised their Series A, they were sued. So that's where patents come in as a defensive store. And then store of value too. You know, they tend to at least pay for themselves over time. And you know, acquirers, you know, you look at the big Googles and Amazons of the world, they have teams of like thousands of lawyers, and all they do is file patents all day. So big companies really like them as well.
That's amazing. And it makes all the sense in the world. And certainly with the patents, you're positioning yourself very nicely as the CEO and founder of the company. What types of companies are reaching out to your company to provide them the services that you offer? Kind of describe the type of company or the government agency, if you will, that's reaching out to use NanoVM's, you know, second generation Unikernel cloud-based solution.
Yeah. So earlier on, there's kind of 2 really big reasons why companies wanted to check out Unikernels. And those were the security and the performance benefits. You know, something we didn't really mention was these things tend to run a lot faster too. So we can take the exact same application that you run on Google Cloud or Microsoft Azure or whatever, run it twice as fast on Google, 3 times as fast on Amazon. And performance, you know, some developers might geek out on performance, but that also directly affects the bottom line too, because you're using less resources. So you automatically start decreasing your cloud costs simply by using these. So security is kind of like the main thing. And so, you know, even not for protecting and defensive measures, you know, we have a payment processor company that's using us over in France. And they mentioned we passed our PCI compliance by using this, because if you've ever looked at these compliance lists, you know, it's usually this massive Excel sheet with, you know, do you rotate passwords? Do you log this? Do you do this? Do you do this? And a lot of that just, you know, gets thrown out the window in a Unikernel approach, because we simply don't have those mechanisms. It's very isolated. And so it takes a lot of that work away. Similarly, in defense, they have the same sort of stuff. They call them STIGs. And they're these security documents, and they're just massive documents, like 30, 40 pages long. And it's just, do you do this? Do you do this? They spend a lot of time dealing with this. Whenever they want to go adopt software, they have to go through and, you know, make sure that it complies or not, or at least, you know, gets a good enough score. And so again, like, we were showing in certain documents where we had like a 67% reduction in some of these security controls. And so it just makes things a lot easier. And then, so on the final note, that's something that we didn't even realize, but you know, cloud infrastructure can be kind of complex. And so if you look at current, you know, heavily adopted solutions today, like containers and Kubernetes, complexity is the next keyword that you'll see whenever you type it into Google. And so we're starting to see some more adoption from that crowd, simply because of the simplicity that these unikernels give you. You know, just it takes away all this massive headache. And, you know, DevOps professional, the, you know, who are some of our end users, those guys are super expensive. Here in the Bay Area, it could be like $200K a year, and they don't even code. So it's a huge cost center too.
Ian, it's really interesting and it's really remarkable what's been created, you know, through the operating system. It's really been designed for today's generation of cloud infrastructure. And what I love what I'm hearing is that, you know, when you utilize a unikernel or utilize the unikernel approach, it takes up minimal resources and it takes up minimal space, comparatively speaking. And at the same time, besides the minimal resources and minimal space it takes up, it improves the application speed and the computer security. So it seems like you've ticked off all four of the main boxes at the company at NanoVMS. So really interesting. So let's talk about, you know, DevOps, because you mentioned that. How are they able to access, you know, the base kernel? Is it open source? Is it free? How does all that work for the DevOps users?
Yeah. So DevOps and SREs and sysadmins, those are all our kind of end users. They might not necessarily be a financial buyer, you know, it might be their boss or a CISO or somebody like that, but they're the actual ones using the tools that we produce. And a lot of our tooling is open source. And so what that means is it's free as in free speech. They can look at the code, modify the code, all that good stuff. And it's also free as in beer, as in, you know, somebody give you a free beer. That's kind of a necessity for this sort of bottoms up growth led by these types of people, because, you know, these are software people. They don't really want to buy stuff to begin with. They don't like to be marketed to. But you know, you have this free source that they can download immediately, get started running immediately. It's very similar to what we used to call shareware back in the 90s. So it leads for more adoption and lots of early utilization. And so when they go back to their company, and they work in a company of 1,000 engineers and they're like, hey, we're going to use this software. Now, all of a sudden, like that company comes to us for support, subscriptions or help, or, you know, some professional services in the form of custom work, that sort of thing.
Evan, Ian, it's so interesting because when we think about it, you know, we think about the DevOps market, you know, it's expected to be worth, you know, $15 billion or more in the next, you know, 4 or 5 years. And it has an annual compound growth rate of almost 20%. So when you built the company and you were building the company in, were you focused in on the DevOps market, or was that something that was secondary to the initial offering and initial thought of the company?
So, yeah, I mean, maybe it's best to kind of do the origin bit. So to be clear, we didn't invent this idea or this technology. It's an idea that's been kicked around in academia for a long time. And I originally was reading some of these academic papers back in like 2014 or something like that. And, I was just getting really fascinated with the idea. It's like, huh, that makes a lot of sense to just like run one application per VM. And, you know, at the time nobody ran a Go unikernel. And so we went out and had that done. And, you know, the first time I saw that booted up on KVM, which is what we call a hypervisor, it just kind of blew my mind. I was like, wow, this is the future, you know, of software infrastructure. And so it's just I realized what I was getting into. I mean, at the end of the day, we're writing a new operating system. So it's not like a small piece of work.
That's right.
It's well, a lot of like super low level stuff. As I mentioned, Linux is like 30 years old. You know, Windows has been around forever too. So it's not a small undertaking, but I just knew that the impact having, you know, I'm I'm almost, you know, reaching 40, and I've been hacking around since I was like 10. So, you know, I just have the same amount of decades of seeing all this. And I understand how massive of an impact it truly is. And so whether I was looking at the DevOps market or not, I just kind of inherently knew how big of a deal it was going to be.
I love it. It's so great to hear this story. You know, people are using the, you know, nano VMs because of the security, how fast it is and how easy it is to use. And you really have hit on something very remarkable with the unikernel, you know, second generation cloud-based solution. So Ian, when we think about running a company like this, where there's so many, you know, interesting people on board and you've been able to attract such a great team, what is it that you look for when you hire someone to join your team? What's the most important thing? Is it the passion, the intelligence level, the commitment to the customer? When you hire someone to join your world-class team, what are you looking for right now?
Yeah. So, you know, there's this kind of this trope out there, especially in the startup world, where, you know, you want to hire in for mercenaries versus missionaries. And, you know, at least at our level, and at least for our company, you know, we definitely need the missionary focus for sure. I found that, you know, somebody who actually believes in what they're doing and, you know, is not just collecting a check every day, they're just 1,000 times better at what they do, and, you know, much more efficient, much more focused and all that. And then at the same time, you know, the mercenary, I guess you can take that two different ways. One is like, you're just collecting the check, but then there's that kind of aggressiveness with it too. So I definitely like to see that, you know, on the technical side, writing a kernel, it's not a skill that most developers have. In fact, it's actually a little bit hard to recruit for that position. We find the best, you know, candidates come from networking and storage companies, simply because that's where those people wind up nowadays. Having said that, it's also something that, again, not a lot of companies are actually doing. And so when we find the right candidate, they're super happy to hop in too, because, you know, there's just not enough companies out there working on that sort of stuff. So that's pretty good.
I love it. It's so interesting. And you know, when we talk about founders and we talk about startups, obviously, you know, you've been doing this now for a period of time that has allowed you to put out sort of your minimal viable product. It's already been accepted. It's already being used, you know, everywhere, including the United States Air Force. So when we think about being a founder and we think about sort of, you know, the aha moment that you had with regard to, you know, putting this system together and putting together an operating system like this and the aha moment about the unikernel, could you bring us inside that aha moment for you? Like, when did the light bulb go off and say to yourself, wow, I've got something here and I can build this nano VMs?
Yeah, no, I mean, it really goes back to, you know, when we first booted that first Go unikernel up on KVM, because I'd been toying around with some other unikernel projects in the space. And, you know, to be clear, there's like 10 different projects out there, but most of them are all academic in nature. A lot of them were kind of custom built for very specific purposes. And there's only been a couple that had companies behind them, but they ran out of funding too fast, or, you know, they were forced to kind of pivot into something else. But yeah, I mean, I was given a talk over in Moscow, like back in 2015, and kind of just sitting there in that daze, you know, cause of the flight and booting that application up on KVM. And it just completely blew my mind, how clear of a picture it was going to be, you know, in terms of like what should happen in the future.
So. That's so interesting, Ian. You know, we touched on the security aspect of what you're doing, and, you know, it's this beautiful sort of fabric that you've been able to put together with the business with regard to, you know, using the unikernels, which are designed to run a single program as an OS, but Let's talk a little bit more about the security aspect of it, because that's something that is just really remarkable. And it sort of is an added benefit to using the system, your cloud-based solution at NanoVM. So could you talk a little bit more about the security? Because we found that very fascinating.
Yeah. So this security is, there's a couple of things about that. One is we've kind of developed this 4-point security model. These things don't have users or passwords. There's no way to log into them, no SSH or shell. And what's called the attack surface is massively reduced. So it's about less than a 10th of a percent of the Linux kernel. And there's reasons for this. You know, Linux is explicitly designed to run on bare metal, like actual real hardware, whereas this only runs in a VM. So about half the code we can just immediately throw out. And then the single process model gets rid of a whole bunch of complexity and a whole bunch of security concerns. So when I say single process, it's not technically correct to say it's a single process, single program. But for our purposes, you can just pretend that, you know, what it really means is you can literally only run one program on these machines. So when an attacker is breaking in, they can't just start running an illicit crypto miner, you know, mining cryptocurrency. They can't run MySQL dump against the database, which is like every single data breach out there. A lot of these attacks just immediately stop. And, you know, security is also my background. So this is one of the reasons what got me interested on unikernels to begin with was that's my background. And, you know, most of our earlier investors, about half of our cap table on the institutional side are world renowned VCs in cybersecurity. So like Ron Gula, who was from Tenable Systems, that's like a $3 billion cybersecurity company, Interloop Capital, Ray Rothrock. So there's we have quite the bench in terms of cyber, investors, and they immediately saw like what we're doing and how it's completely different than most of those cyber companies, which is one of the reasons why we don't consider ourselves a cyber company, even though it's a huge benefit.
So. I love it. And of course, what your system does is you're able to shrink existing applications into small, secure virtual machines. And what we found very interesting is that it allows you to run 1,000 times more VMs per server. Let's talk about that, because that's just like a remarkable statistic that people kind of have to get their arms around.
Yeah. Well, here's some more stats for you. So I'm in the Bay Area. And so we're surrounded by tech companies, right? You know, Uber, Airbnb, all these sorts of iconic companies. Now, a lot of people who aren't technical might not know this, but, you know, over at Uber, for instance, they don't have just one database. They don't have hundreds of databases. They literally like have thousands of databases, thousands of web servers. They actually have a little graphic showing like this constellation of different services that they have. And, you know, it's literally measured in the thousands of applications. And of course they have thousands of engineers to help them out with that. But each of those little applications resides on at least one operating system or more if it's distributed, which it surely is. And so that's a huge level of complexity when you realize that all this software is already being provisioned to the cloud. And so, you know, what the unikernel does is it just says, hey, we don't really need this second layer, this second abstraction. The only reason we're using it is because NanoVMs didn't exist for the past 15 years. And so, we can shave off that entire chunk of complexity and it's a huge performance degrader too. So, but yeah, every single tech company is like that. And, you know, all companies are trying to make themselves a tech company now. So it's, you have banks with like 13 data centers, you know, and stuff like that. So what tech companies' problems are today are just going to be everybody's problems tomorrow. So we're really kind of setting this baseline for the future, something kind of newer to build on. You know, politicians love to talk about upgrading the bridges and the roads and stuff like that. The software infrastructure out there is decrepit and breaking down and just massively, massively underfunded and under dealt with. So yeah. That's one of the missions there.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there. It's so interesting what you're doing. And like you mentioned, you know, security issues put data at risk. They cost companies millions and millions of dollars. And we always hear about, you know, the bigger companies with the potential fines that they have, like Facebook with their fines in Europe over their data breach, and Google Plus with their problem with the users, you know, data being exposed, and of course Uber as well. So it makes all the sense in the world that the big companies' problems are going to become the little companies' problems eventually. And you're going to be sort of right there at the right place at the right time to sort of solve these problems, which I really love. It's really, really interesting and remarkable, Ian, what you've been able to do with the unikernel infrastructure. It makes all the sense in the world to run your applications faster, safer, with less cost. And using this new generation that Ian and his team have been able to come up with the cloud infrastructure. So really, really interesting. You know, Ian, I know you're super busy. I know you've got so much going on. You're working with, you know, not only the U.S. government, but other companies as well. And I wanted to take the remaining part of the show, if you don't mind, because I think we've really covered what you're doing with this second generation product. It's just so interesting and so like high level and high tech. I wanted to talk a little bit about entrepreneurship with you. You know, as we have people watch the show, we have younger entrepreneurs or older entrepreneurs, maybe with a younger company or you know, a more immature company that are facing roadblocks, and they have hurdles and they have speed bumps in the road. And I know, sure, you know, they're listening to you and they're saying, wow, this is some heady stuff here. I mean, what Ian's doing and what his team is doing over at, you know, NanoVMs is very interesting. And it's like cutting edge. And he's been able to build this incredible, you know, structure and this incredible solution that appears to be right in the middle of where they need to be right now for not only today, but position themselves for the future. But for the younger entrepreneurs watching the show that are hitting a roadblock, what can you tell them, Ian, sort of to get through that roadblock, and from a fellow entrepreneur talking to another entrepreneur, what it takes to get through the tough times?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, if you think there's one big roadblock, you should learn how to do hurdles, because I look back at some of the roadblocks that I've had in the past and I'm like, man, that was nothing compared to this other stuff that I've had to hit. And it's, you know, it's just one thing after another. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of like getting really good at problem solving and, you know, don't get like really fixated on one thing. If you're trying to put all your eggs in your basket, that's the wrong method. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, I'm really counting on like one contract or whatever to hit. While I'm waiting there, I don't just think about that one contract. I go out and find like 10 other opportunities to match it, to where it kind of lessens the blow if I don't hit it. And so you need to do things like that. And I mean, honestly, life will just test the hell out of you too. Like when we got the day that we got into the Alchemist Accelerator, which was kind of a little accelerator here in the Bay Area, a tree fell on my house, completely destroyed the roof. So, you know, I ended up like selling my really nice car, because I've been a software engineer to help finance the company. I bailed out the company a couple times. I mean, it's just, you gotta do what you gotta do, you know? And if this is what you want to do, you know, expect to clean some toilets and that sort of thing. So, it's not, you know, if you go read TechCrunch and they make it seem very easy. I think for the majority of us, it's just like a lot of really hard, grueling work. And it's so easy to just say, screw it, I'm done, blah, blah, blah. But if you just kind of keep at it, you know, just keep going.
So. I love it. I love it, Ian. It's great advice for the younger entrepreneurs and for any entrepreneur, really. And if you like Ian's story, we love Ian's story, and we love the story at NanoVM VMs. There's an interesting opportunity as well in terms of a potential fundraising or an opportunity to get involved with what Ian's doing. So we're going to put some links below the interview so you can check those out as well. It's very, very exciting, very interesting that the people watching the show, if you love what he's doing with the second generation of Unikernel and it resonates with you, you could actually jump on board with Ian and get involved in as an investor in an interesting way. And we'll put the links below on how you can do that, because a lot of people are sort of hearing this story and it's resonating, and he's hitting the right story at the right time to be right in the middle of the entire process when it comes to, you know, running a single program as an OS. So it's very, very interesting, Ian. And I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show today. You know, when we think about people that are on the cutting edge, people that have taken something and sort of put it in a position to not only help companies today, but to help companies well into the future, what you're doing at the company is remarkable, and we're going to watch. And I don't even know if I'll be able to book you to come on the show in another few months, because I know things are moving so fast at a velocity that's incredible at the company. But Ian, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the .com Magazine Entrepreneur Spotlight Series today. Very fascinating work, and congratulations. I'm real happy I got you on before, you know, you hit the hockey stick growth, which is going to happen very shortly for the company.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having us, Andy. Appreciate it.